us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. Text us that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with Sandy Williams.
Who we got?
Who would you say if I say uh-oh?
CJ.
Yeah, CJ.
Well, see, I'm glad to hear from CJ. Actually, I was far away, but I missed him.
Oh, CJ, does that change your tenor and talking to our good friend Sandy? Good morning, CJ. How you doing?
Morning, Earl and Sandy. Sandy, I'm glad you had a good trip. I hope you missed me.
Well, actually, you don't understand, CJ. We aren't adversaries. We're simply foils. We talk about things and have different perspectives. But, you know, in fact, I saw an interesting ad that was run by the governor of Colorado, a Democrat, and the governor of Utah, who's a Republican. And the whole thing was it's an ad for learning to talk together. And so that the two of them put on a talk about how it is we might talk to one another with less stridency and more civility. And so that's what I'm shooting for.
Oh, is that nice? You and CJ.
Well, I know, really.
I'm only joking. Yeah. Go ahead, CJ.
No, I really do enjoy you guys. I know that.
Okay, I got it. What's up? What's up? What's up?
Okay. Well, we're talking about, I was going to ask Sandy if he read the Durham report yet to see how corrupt our FBI is. And so I guess, you know.
Well, but here, wait, CJ, let me, wait, CJ. You raised the subject. I didn't read all of it, but I read portions of it. And certainly Durham was suggesting there be modifications in how the FBI operates. But your conclusion about its corruption is just a further expression of what Earl and I were talking about earlier, which is our general cynicism about our government and the extent to which we don't trust it. And so I don't either blame you or find it necessarily troublesome that you would reach a conclusion that the FBI is corrupt. There were many of us as young people who were reaching that same conclusion when J. Edgar Hoover was running
in the 60s.
And when he was investigating
Martin Luther King
and otherwise, yeah. Trying to manifest his own personal views by how it is he was using his people. So government is a very sensitive thing that needs to be honest. It needs to be well run because whether you're right or not about its corruption, our government has done plenty of things over the last decades to breed in each of us the skepticism that can bring us to that conclusion.
I agree, but the Durham report proved it.
Well, no, wait. I mean, the only thing I'll disagree about is I don't think the Durham report proved anything more than that there were some that there might be some problems in process and that there might have been some individuals who were subject to being reprimanded, but it doesn't matter because you and I can argue about something that relates in some respects to our personal perspective about the level of skepticism. I am very skeptical about our government in so many ways, and I'm
Democrat or Republican.
Yeah, yeah.
Please, Sandy, let me get two sentences out. Tom Tiffany, our congressman from Wisconsin, stated it very well in the questioning of Durham. Obama, Biden knew about it. Clinton and
knew about what?
Paid for it.
Knew about what, CJ?
The 2.5-year lie about Russian collusion. Adam Schiff, who covered it up for 2 years and lied about it, and the Democrats celebrate him for censorship.
Oh.
And it was a lie.
Well,
the FBI orchestrated. Can I finish? The FBI orchestrated it, and the mere fact that the FBI knew about it, spied on the campaign. Please read the whole.
CJ, we don't need to. We don't need to go over again 2-3 years ago, right? Okay, and for you to say that this is all under Democrats and the FBI is crooked because the Democrats were running things. What about when Donald Trump was running things? What about when George Bush was running things? Were they as crooked then also?
Each case is different.
Okay.
And how well, about the Biden?
Well,
now we know the FBI.
No.
Actually, the problems that have just been identified under the Durham report were all problems during the time when Trump was running things. So that was the FBI under Donald Trump. But I don't know. I'm not interested so much in the partisan process or picking apart the merits of issues associated with corruption in Washington. I think corruption is rampant in Washington. I think Donald Trump's a corrupt figure, but I think that the Bidens certainly have a lot of questions to answer in that regard as well. Hunter Biden able to sell paintings for $500,000 strikes me as being some smoke where there might be fire about selling influence to people. So, we don't have disagreement about the extent to which we need the people of the United States need to take back control of government away from moneyed interests. And I think Tom from L.A. agrees with that. And much of what you say, CJ, suggests to me that you agree with that too. We just might have disagreement about particular factoids, but it doesn't. We don't have to be terribly polarized from one another in the process of just simply recognizing that we are skeptical about our government.
All right, thank you very much for the call, CJ. Tom from LA, what's going on, Tom?
Yeah, first off, I believe ultimately that we the people are the government. I believe that there's one party in this country that wants to destroy government and so put it as small so they can drown it in the bathtub. And I do believe that there's one party that is actually in favor of good government. And I think that the party that wants to drown it in the bathtub is doing a hell of a job. And I think the party that wants, some of the people that want so-called good government are also helping along with that situation. But people need to realize if we don't have government, that vacuum is going to be filled by the corporations. It's going to be filled by somebody. And if we the people truly are the government, then we should all be standing up and getting all money, all lobbyists, everything out of politics. There's one party, CJ, that brought up money in politics and passed not only Buckley versus Vallejo, Citizens United, and First National Bank versus Bilotti. And those were all Supreme Court justices that were on the conservative side of the aisle. They are the ones that brought corporations in charge. Ronald Reagan said the worst thing that can be said is where I'm here from the government and I'm here to help you. Give me a break. When someone says that to me is treason, because we the people are supposed to be the government. Yes, we elect our representatives, but if our representatives are bought off because of the fact that it's 100 degrees in the Atlantic Ocean right now, and they're bought off by some fossil fuel giant, then we the people are not the government. You're absolutely correct. But the point is, we're supposed to be. If we got money out of politics, we would be. And Sandy, I'm just going to say one thing really quickly. I am so tired of people comparing different countries to the United States of America when it comes to, oh, wow, that is such a poor place. We're lucky we're not living there or whatever. Because you know what? We're not supposed to be set up that way. We're supposed to be set up where we have a middle class. We're supposed to be set up where we the people are the government, and we're in the likes of FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who saved this country from the first great Republican depression. So I just get a little tired of the fact that everyone's saying government bad, government horrible, blah, blah, blah. When you know what? We the people are the government. Quit talking about me that way. I am a person that's a participant in the government.
Well,
if we got money out of politics, then I'll tell you what, the corporations would no longer run this government.
Well, I, you know, I, Tom, I,
hey, Tom, thank you very much. Thank you very much for the call.
I applaud all of that. I think the thing that Americans don't realize is that government and the rule of law is vital, absolutely vital. And what separates us from places that are really headed downhill is the fact that rampant corruption does not exist in the United States, that we have a rule of law that is applied across the board, and it's demonstrated by what's going on now in Washington and in these various processes. And if we lose the rule of law, if people in this country get so skeptical about government that they decide that government is illegitimate, and we end up with people with those 20 million assault rifles deciding that they're going to take matters into their own hands, we will have a vacuum, and that vacuum will be filled in a terrible way. It'll be filled not just with corporations, but with authoritarian kinds of government processes. And you can look through history and see this. And you can see, and then in the world, the trend in this direction, the Netanyahu changes in Israel, the changes in Hungary, the movement here in the United States. So frustration with government needs to be handled by improving the government, not destroying it. And so that's why I guess when I was talking about skepticism in government, I wasn't throwing up my hands in despair and saying we ought to throw it out. My position is we ought to change things so that we can get money out of government, put government back in the position where it's responsive to the people and honest with the people.
All right, got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. It's Friday. That means Fridays with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back.
Never know what you're going to hear on the Earl Ingram Show.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us. I know Calvin sometimes wonders, man, he's all over the place. Yesterday we had a lot of, what was the woman's name that died?
Sinead O'Connor.
Sinead O'Connor.
Oh, yeah.
Huh. Yeah. All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789, Texas, that same number. You know, Sandy, you know, Donald Trump, do you think he's starting to feel a heat? I mean, he's human. He has to know. I mean, he's playing this game in his own mind that I've got so much power that the Justice Department, I can make them heal.
Well, you know, go ahead, I'm sorry.
That he can make the Justice Department heal because he's got all these people, you know, one-third of Republicans who support him, and I've got my group of people. But the Justice Department can't allow him to do that, can he?
Well, no. I mean, here's the problem. You know, he does have a bunch of people who have bought into the notion that the government, like I described earlier, that there's a deep state, that there's a process that in which the establishment government is going to take on someone like Donald Trump and destroy him for their own purposes, right, not because of his own failings. And he understands as well the power of the process that could end up being social upheaval to the extent that group is stirred up, right? So what I found particularly troubling was the meeting, the report on the meeting of his attorneys yesterday with the prosecutors in the January 6 investigation, in which they apparently told the prosecutors that regardless of the facts, that bringing an indictment against Donald Trump would destroy the democracy, that it would destroy our democracy. Well, saying that is really an implicit threat. I mean, they would say, no, we're just predicting what the reality will be if that happens. But that reality wouldn't occur if Donald Trump really put great importance on maintaining our democracy and making sure that it wasn't threatened, because he could back off from that kind of rhetoric. He could back off from the defense that he should not have the law applied against him because it's a political witch hunt, and just basically deal with the legal issues as they're presented to him, as they are presented based on facts. But he has decided to wrap himself in a defense, which is, I'm an important political figure, and I'm really too important to be held to the standard of law for what I would view as petty legal offenses, because whereas maybe Tom, Dick, and Mary should get prosecuted for this, the president of the United States or the ex-president shouldn't, because that's a political witch hunt. All of that is designed to stir up a group of people who support him, who would take the view then, led by his view, that he is a victim, and he's a victim of a political process. He's not a victim of his own acts and the facts that are presented. And so it's, to me, horrifying that this person who wants to be president of the United States doesn't actually want to preserve our democracy at his own expense.
So let's do this. Let's go to Gary from Sussex. Good morning, Gary. You say what, quickly?
Well, you know, I agree with you guys. I think it's on both sides. Look at the Biden crime family, all the people that
no,
are getting
man, listen.
Millions and millions.
I know, but listen, when he goes to court, they're not going to say he's not going to be able to get away with the Biden family. It's just him.
Well, and you know, like we've said before, though, I think we're both for, Earl and I both are for, the law being applied to everyone. It should be applied to Biden and Hunter Biden. And apparently it is being applied. You know, that the plea bargain that Hunter Biden was supposedly going to enter into was abandoned.
Rescinded, right.
Rescinded, and he's now in a political process. There have been, so far, no facts alleged to support a claim against the president himself. So, you know, I'm not sure that it isn't being pursued on both sides. But, you know, the fact that he did it, it's like when two kids get in trouble with their parents because they both threw rocks at cars. It's not really a defense to say, well, Johnny threw a rock at a car, so why are you punishing me? You know, no, Johnny and Tommy should get punished for throwing rocks at cars.
So, Sandy, you're an attorney, man. So, is that going to be a defense that'll work for Donald Trump? Well, Joe Biden and Hunter Biden didn't do.
It won't even be admissible in court. It won't even be allowed to be talked about.
Okay.
It's not relevant in a court proceeding.
Gary?
I know, but what I'm saying is, like Sandy said, there's a bunch of people that absolutely love Donald Trump. He's got these people on his side.
All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. Something serene about that.
Oh, there, yeah, it is. Lots of that music has basically got that effect. It's music to study by.
I wonder if Donald Trump listens to that. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show, as always. And maybe we should suggest it. 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Friday. It means Friday's with Sandy Williams. He's back. Sandy, you wanted to respond.
Well, I was just going to finish the discussion about our democracy and its protection. Trump talks about the democracy collapsing if he's indicted and pursued for the crimes. But we should go back to the time of Nixon when, you know, Nixon obviously was, based on recordings and what have you, going to be exceedingly vulnerable to prosecution. Nixon, person that I wasn't fond of then, not particularly fond of historically, but I am fond of the fact that he honored our democracy with his conduct. He resigned from office and went off into the shadows, okay, and did not try to rally his people into some kind of political foment, some kind of political uprising to stop the Watergate investigation as a political witch hunt. And he ultimately then was pardoned. And both sides of the aisle went along with that because they understood the extent to which imprisoning an ex-president would put great pressure on our democracy. So the period of the Watergate investigation and its outcome was reflective of a period when people really honored the democracy in spite of the conduct, which was undemocratic at its heart. They honored the democracy. They honored the importance in America of the transfer of power. And that isn't what's going on today. That isn't what Donald Trump is doing. Donald Trump not only has his lawyers talking about what will happen to the democracy, but the reason they're able to talk about it is that his behavior makes that outcome altogether possible.
Let's go to Bill from Oconomowoc. Good morning to you, Bill. How you doing? Thank you very much for the call. You say what, sir?
They say, first of all, that highbrow music for this old geezer. Boy, I haven't heard music like that in a long time. You really like, boy, I got the wrong station. I was expecting you to force talk.
That highbrow music is for Sandy Williams.
No.
Oh, okay. Well, Mr. Williams, you've got excellent taste. But I can't agree with you more, Sandy. Richard Nixon had one thing that has escaped the whole Republican Party that supports Trump. He had integrity. He had somewhat honesty. He cared about he cared about our democracy, and he cared about America. He did have a lot more than Trump has. Trump has none of that. And at last count, he's passed John Gotti in federal indictments and RICO charges and everything. He has more felonies, more crimes committed than any president in the history of our country. So history's being made as we talk. And if you think they're winning, don't ask Mike Lindell, my pillow man. He is he's bankrupt. They had so much fun with their little beer and commercials, Bud Light. What they didn't realize is actually that was almost like a hedge fund or creating a hedge fund. They were trying to, on purpose, drive the market down, but what they didn't realize is then that became an opportunity. Their whole world is imploding as we speak, and this will be in the history books. But, Sandy, thanks so much for bringing to light the difference between Richard Nixon and Donald Trump. And by the way, guys, keep listening to your highbrow music and have a great weekend.
All right. Bill, thank you very much for the call. Sandy, you want to respond to what Bill is saying?
Well, no. I always appreciate Bill's calls, but I think we were going to segue into talking about Israel and Netanyahu because the problems we have in our country, this creep towards authoritarianism, is not just our country. People across the world apparently are getting restless about democracy, or at least the leaders in charge are restless with the inconvenience that democracy poses to them for long-term leadership. And so here we have the Knesset in Israel, and Israel has long been viewed as a real bastion of sort of almost model democracy. And now we have this long-term leader, Netanyahu, with his conservative allies, taking on a very basic principle of the division of powers by trying to adopt in Israel a process in which whenever the Supreme Court of Israel would rule some law to be unconstitutional, the Knesset can immediately take that decision up and overrule it. So it's like totally getting rid of that space that is the division of power between the judiciary and the legislature.
So the huge protests that rocked Israel over the coalition government's judicial reforms were on pause Tuesday. The nation appeared to be taking stock of fallout from Monday's momentous vote in the Knesset, Israel's parliament, which curbed the power of the nation's Supreme Court. It was a victory for Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and his far-right and ultra-conservative religious coalition partners, a bitter defeat for Israel's opposition, and a shock to the majority of Israelis who, according to most polls, were against the move. Prominent Israeli political analyst and journalist Barak Ravid told CBS News that his country was in uncharted waters. Now, let me ask you, Sandy. Joe Biden is being asked to step in and have a conversation and dialogue with Netanyahu, in which he has said on a few occasions he disagrees with what is taking place. And Netanyahu has kind of thumbed his nose at Joe Biden and is now having more dialogue with China than, you know, his number one ally.
Well, I mean, the problem is that across the world, Erdogan is a person who's not popular with the urbanites and with the intelligentsia of Turkey, but has a strong movement that is basically rural and religious conservative. And the same is true with respect to Netanyahu and Israel. He's very, very popular in the religious conservative space, not popular in the intelligentsia and urbanite space. And so there's a trend in this world towards people in power trying to secure long-term power. And people who are authoritarians deal with one another, because you can cut a deal with if an individual runs a country, the individuals who run countries can sit in a room and cut deals with one another. And it's very convenient, okay? It's a very smooth process for forming alliances, for cutting deals. Xi of China can run around the world and do things unilaterally. Putin of Russia can do things unilaterally. Netanyahu, if he secures these powers, would be increasingly capable of doing that. And so you Lukashenko and so people who control countries like dealing with other people who control countries. It's one of the reasons I think Trump was so attracted to those sort of leaders, because that's how he fancied himself, as being someone who could represent the interests of his country unilaterally. And it's a trend in the world that is concerning, because there are, I think, an increasing number of people in the world who are frustrated with the inefficiencies of democracy and the inability of democracy to deliver to them what they want and need, just as we are in the United States, having an increasing frustration with the inability of our democracy so far to deliver to us. You know, I agree with Tom that the solution to that is fixing our democracy. It's not destroying
it. So, Sandy, the direction that these people want to go is extremely dangerous. We're talking about nuclear armed nations. And the way things are set up in most instances, individuals.
Well, yeah, I mean, nuclear arms are something that are used in combat with one another. I mean, the fact that countries have authoritarian leaders who persist for a long time, Ferdinand Franco of Spain,
right.
Tito of Yugoslavia. I mean, the world is long. We can name those leaders because they are easy to remember because they were around for a long time. That doesn't necessarily doom the world to a conflict with one another, but it's not necessarily good for the countries in which that persists. If that leader, which is typical, doesn't, for instance, countenance political dissent, because freedoms involve the ability to criticize our government. I criticize our government here. You and I do. We would have trouble sitting here doing this in a country led by an authoritarian leader.
So do you see Israel the majority of the people in Israel accepting this fate?
I don't know. I mean, the problem is that Israel is undoubtedly getting polarized in much the same way we are, much the same way that Turkey felt and was when I was there, which is that the people who win are happy and the people who lose in the contest are very unhappy, okay? And so it's not that they simply accept defeat and say, okay, that's the way we're going to be, but we end up with quite polarizing and extreme outcomes from the process.
But Sandy, we're talking about, on the one hand of it, is the majority of the peoples of those nations getting, you know, the short end of the stick.
Well, if you have to understand, Israel is a parliament. They don't elect Netanyahu directly. They elect the members of parliament. The members of parliament enter into various coalitions. Coalitions end up forming governments. The formed government picks the prime minister. It's Netanyahu. But they do have to pass matters through the Knesset, and that's a majority vote, just as it would be in our Congress. And so the people, at least a majority of the representatives of the people, apparently voted for this change. So it's probably a bare majority, and it's probably a very polarized majority. But apparently Netanyahu was able to get a majority of the people in Knesset to vote.
So Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has refused to say if he would abide by any potential Supreme Court ruling striking down his controversial judicial reform law, as Israelis agonize over a looming showdown between their government and the court.
Yeah. I mean, that's a constitutional crisis. And constitutional crises are the things that put at risk the government as formed, you know, the architecture of a government as formed, and makes it possible to consider the notion that it could revert to or convert to something that would be less than a constitutional democracy and more of something that is aimed at long-term leadership.
Which clearly the United States does not want to see from its number one ally.
You and I talk about this. The notion that America should meddle in the internal affairs of other countries, tell them how to govern themselves, is a troublesome concept. It is true, however, that Israel is almost entirely dependent on the United States for at least its financial well-being and its military independence. And so, you know, we have a lot of leverage with Israel. How we should exercise that leverage is probably something we need to be concerned about.
The other side of this, Sandy, is the Palestinian problem and issue.
Yeah.
That is, you know, on a back burner while all this stuff is going on.
Well, I mean, I think I'm just going to simply call a spade a spade. The Israeli lobby in the United States is very powerful. The involvement of those in the United States who are strong Israel supporters, the involvement of those people in our politics is very extensive. They have a great deal of input into both the political party, Republican and Democrat, and our policies. That has had a big impact, for instance, on the willingness of the United States to assert itself about a Palestinian state, for instance. I think that everyone in the United States who talks about this will talk with recognition of the fact that a freestanding Palestinian state is undoubtedly a necessity to achieve any sort of equilibrium in the Mideast.
Sandy, I got to get you hold that thought, and we'll continue on the other side. We'll be right back. For you. welcome back to the Earl Ingram Live Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. Sandy, let me ask you. Milwaukee County has agreed to a 4% sales tax increase. City of Milwaukee, 2 cent sales tax increase. Your thoughts?
The people who are upset about sales tax increases. I mean, obviously, there's some pain involved with a new sales tax, and there will be retail vendors and others who will be concerned about the impact. We've already had one real estate developer who said that they might stall their project. I have scratched my head about that because I tried to understand how it is that a high-rise real estate project on Brady Street in Milwaukee would be materially impacted by the sales tax. My conclusion was that it probably was a convenient negotiating tool to try and get more TIF money from the city for the project, because I don't think there's any direct, particularly negative impact on the project itself. I don't know how much of the materials involved with construction would be subject to the sales tax, but I don't think a great deal.
Let me ask you, what would be the benefit of him postponing it? What would change?
Well, like I said, you might postpone it if you thought you could get more TIF money commitment from the city that would make the project essentially financially better from your standpoint as the result of a because delaying it otherwise has no, you know, if you're going to do it, you're going to do it. And the sales tax impact is going to be experienced if you do it, whatever that impact is.
So your thoughts on that 4%, 0.4% sales tax increase for Milwaukee County?
Well, the Milwaukee County needs an alternative source of revenue, and the property tax is not a sound method for it. Almost every city in the country has a sales tax imposed by it for this very reason. And, you know, the fact is that urban jurisdictions that are less, we should have a metropolitan area-wide government, in which case this wouldn't be anything to talk about at all. But the fact is that because we have sort of a balkanized boundary system, Ozaukee County, Waukesha County, others that don't have this tax, there will be some negative impact upon those located within the city of Milwaukee by the fact that goods you buy there will be a bit more expensive.
You know, my response to it, Sandy, is, you know, and I can't speak for everybody, but 0.04%, bring it on.
Yeah. I mean, it's not, yeah. It shouldn't be enough to make anybody's decision different about almost anything.
Politically, it's what we're talking about.
Yeah, and politically, this is what is required. You know, this is what's required to have a financially sound urban government. And it's not just Milwaukee that needs this. It's every large urban center in the United States.
You know, we're at a point, Sandy, where, you know, I had the police chief on, was that yesterday? The city of Milwaukee chief, might have been yesterday or the day before, Jeff Norman. And clearly, you know, the city of Milwaukee Police Department needed resources. You can't say, you know, short all these police officers and somehow you're going to be forced to be able to cut everything else and have police officers. I mean, you know, I supported this from the beginning. I've been supporting it ever since then Mayor Tom Barrett and then County Executive Chris Abley called for it. They've been calling for this for 10 years or more, right?
Yeah.
And been denied. And so I support it.
Well, and I think it's a tribute, actually, to the current city and county administration that they were able to work with the state government to get it accomplished. I mean, whether the negotiation involved some blood money that was unappealing, and it definitely did in terms of the negotiation, but let's face it, this is something that had to get done, needed to get done, and did get done, and it was done under the current leadership.
And, you know, the other side of it, Sandy, and I've said to people in my community who somehow wanted to vote against it and did vote against it, I said, you know, what is the option? There is no option, right?
Right.
It's this Or and then some people said, well, we should have went to bankruptcy. I said, well, Detroit, 10 years later.
Bankruptcy doesn't solve the problem that got you into bankruptcy. Okay, bankruptcy erases some prior debts, but it doesn't solve the ongoing problem that got you to that place in the first place. Going bankrupt is something Donald Trump does, but it's not something that any city should consider doing. It has a long-term irreparable effect on the credit rating.
Well, we know because, again, I remember when Detroit did that, and they're just saying they're just getting to a point now, 10 years later, mm-hmm. where things are not where they were, but it's been a tough struggle to try to dig their way out of that.
Right.
We actually had people here in political office who said, let's go bankrupt.
Well, you know, I think
for political reasons.
I think families have found that when they go bankrupt because of their credit card bills, unless they change either their revenue stream or their spending it's going to happen again. And so that's the problem with an urban bankruptcy, because it's not the result of one-time events. It's the result of a imbalance of revenue and costs.
Sandy, it's good to have you back.
It's great to be back.
I guess it's safe to say you won't be going back to Madagascar anytime soon.
No, it was a very interesting experience. I'm glad I did it. But it's not something I'm going to be doing again.
All right. We got to go. Thank you, Calvin, as always. Thank everybody who made the show go. Enjoy the weekend. It's going to be a great weekend. I'll be back on Monday. Been tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. See you later. All right.